From the hypnotic drum beats of maroon communities to the aroma of sizzling jerk chicken wafting through Kingston street corners, Jamaica is far more than a beach destination. It is a living archive of rebellion, rhythm, and resilience. This island, forged through centuries of struggle and spirit, pulses with stories etched into every patois phrase, every limestone cave, and every plate of ackee and saltfish. Yet, for many travelers, Jamaica remains reduced to sun-soaked resorts and Bob Marley posters. This feature dives deeper, not as a how-to guide or a personal blog, but as a full-spectrum exploration of what to do, what to eat, and how to connect with Jamaica's vibrant culture on its own terms. From dancehall to dreadlocks, sugarcane to spirituality, we'll unpack the island's rich complexities and unforgettable adventures with the curiosity of a cultural documentarian. So, if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Welcome to Jamaica. Set against the deep blues of the Caribbean Sea, and framed by the rising folds of the Blue Mountains, Jamaica commands attention, not just as a tropical destination, but as a cultural superpower. At just over 4,200 square miles, the island packs an outsized punch. It is the birthplace of reggae music, the Rastafari movement, world record sprinters, and a culinary identity that reaches far beyond its shores. Yet, for all its global influence, Jamaica is a place best understood not from cruise ship brochures or resort menus, but from its people, its rhythms, and its resilience. Geographically, Jamaica is the third largest island in the Caribbean, nestled south of Cuba and west of Haiti. It's divided into three counties and 14 parishes, each with its own distinct character. From the bustling urban grid of Kingston to the serene, untouched coves of Portland. The interior of the island is mountainous and lush, with mist-covered rainforests and fertile valleys, giving way to dramatic cliffs and coral-fringed coastlines. The biodiversity is impressive. Over 3,000 species of plants, hundreds of birds, and unique reptiles like the Jamaican iguana, once thought extinct. But geography only tells part of the story. To understand Jamaica is to understand its defiance. Colonized first by the Spanish in 1494, then violently seized by the British in 1655, Jamaica became a plantation economy built on enslaved African labor. Sugarcane was king, and the brutality of chattel slavery would define the island's socioeconomic structure for centuries. But resistance was also constant. From the legendary Queen Nanny and her maroon warriors who waged guerrilla warfare in the 18th century, to modern freedom fighters like Marcus Garvey and Bob Marley, Jamaica has always produced revolutionaries, many of whom were never handed freedom but took it anyway. Today, that revolutionary spirit is embedded in daily life, in the casual swagger of a street vendor, the call and response of churchgoers in a revivalist service, the warning lyrics of a dancehall track. It is alive, and it is evolving. Jamaica is not frozen in time. It is not a postcard. It's a country grappling with real complexities. Tourism's double-edged sword, diaspora identity, economic inequality, and climate vulnerability. Yet it continues to innovate, inspire, and ignite imagination. Culturally, Jamaica defies categorization. Though often associated with Rastafari and reggae, these are only threads in a much broader tapestry. Catholicism, revivalism, and African spiritual traditions coexist. Culinary practices are shaped by African, Indian, Chinese, and European influences. Language is a constant dance, standard English intertwined with Jamaican patois, a creole that carries rhythm, metaphor, and ancestral memory. The food, the music, the language, the resistance, it's all connected, and it's all Jamaican. In the chapters ahead, we'll journey through Jamaica's urban centers and rural hideaways. We'll meet the artisans, chefs, historians, farmers, and musicians shaping the island's soul. We'll explore what to do, where to go, what to eat, and how to connect with the culture in a way that's respectful, informed, and unforgettable. This is not just a guide to traveling through Jamaica. It's a deeper look at how Jamaica travels through the world. Chapter 2. Kingston, the pulse of reggae and resistance. At the southeastern edge of Jamaica, where the land meets the restless tide, Kingston rises not as a monument to paradise, but as a reflection of power, struggle, and sound. This is no tourist bubble. It is the capital of Jamaica, the country's political and cultural nerve center, and the birthplace of reggae, dub, and dancehall. With its stark social contrasts and creative genius, Kingston remains one of the most misunderstood cities in the Caribbean, and one of the most influential. Founded in 1692 after a massive earthquake destroyed the nearby city of Port Royal, Kingston has long been shaped by disruption. What began as a refuge became a center of trade, then government, and eventually resistance. The legacy of colonialism still pulses beneath its streets, visible in the Georgian architecture of downtown, in the British names on government buildings, and in the raw energy that fills its open-air markets and dance hall clashes. Visitors often arrive with caution, unsure of what Kingston has to offer beyond its cautionary tales. But those willing to look beyond the headlines will discover a city teeming with life, stories, and unmatched cultural richness. At the heart of Kingston's cultural identity is reggae music, a sound born of oppression, spirituality, and defiance. A visit to the Bob Marley Museum on Hope Road offers more than a glimpse into the life of Jamaica's most famous son. It serves as a portal into the island's political and spiritual awakening during the 1970s. Marley's former home, preserved as both shrine and symbol, reminds visitors that reggae was not just entertainment, it was resistance. But Marley was not alone. The neighboring Trenchtown community, often overlooked by tourists, was once the creative engine of Jamaican music. Here, in humble tenement yards, artists like Peter Tosh, Bunny Wailer, and Alton Ellis crafted the foundation of ska, rocksteady, and reggae. Today, grassroots programs like the Trenchtown Culture Yard preserve that heritage, offering tours led by local residents and musicians who carry the torch forward. Kingston is also the seat of Jamaica's political consciousness. The National Gallery of Jamaica, located downtown, is the island's premier art institution. Inside, visitors can trace Jamaica's visual evolution, from colonial-era portraits to contemporary installations grappling with race, identity, and diaspora. Works by Edna Manley Barrington Watson and Ebony G. Patterson do not shy away from the country's traumas. They confront them. On the streets, politics is palpable. From the colorful murals honoring Marcus Garvey and Nanny of the Maroons to the weekly gatherings of Rasta elders in Emancipation Park, Kingston wears its convictions openly. The city's energy is defiant, its style bold. This is where fashion meets philosophy, where dance is a language of protest. For those seeking Kingston's culinary soul, Coronation Market in downtown is a sensory overload in the best way. The island's largest open-air market, it's where vendors from every parish gather to sell yams, callaloo, Scotch bonnet peppers, and fresh fish caught off Port Royal. No restaurant can match the immediacy of a fried dumpling from a roadside stall or a bag of peppered shrimp purchased from a tin tray held high by a roaming vendor. Here, food is commerce, but it's also culture. Conversations happen over ackee and saltfish, negotiations are sealed with coconut water, and memories are made on curry-stained napkins. And when the sun goes down, Kingston transforms again. The nightlife here is not an accessory to the culture, it is the culture. Sound systems battle in downtown yards, selectors ignite crowds in open-air venues, and dance hall fans gather for sessions that stretch into the early morning hours. Clubs like Dub Club offer a panoramic view of the city below while vibrating with deep bass lines and herbal incense. It's part party, part ritual. Kingston is not an easy city. It is layered, urgent, and unflinching. It challenges assumptions. It demands that visitors pay attention. not only to the music and the food, but to the deeper currents of injustice, identity, and invention that run through its veins. For those who meet Kingston on its own terms, the reward is unmatched. This is a city that doesn't cater. It educates. It doesn't sell paradise. It offers perspective. And in that truth, Kingston becomes not just a stop on a travel itinerary, but a pulse point for understanding modern Jamaica. Chapter 3, Montego Bay and Negril, Tourism's Playground. On Jamaica's northwestern coast, where golden sand meets crystal clear waters, two names dominate the Caribbean travel imagination, Montego Bay and Negril. For decades, these towns have shaped how the world envisions Jamaican paradise. An endless summer of turquoise bays, cocktail glasses sweating in the heat, and reggae rhythms floating across beachfront bars. But beyond the sun loungers and resort walls lies a more complicated narrative. These towns are not just vacation playgrounds, they are living communities negotiating the fragile balance between authenticity and tourism, preservation and profit. Montego Bay, the Gateway. Montego Bay, or Mobe as locals call it, is the island's second-largest city and its busiest tourism hub. Its proximity to Sangster International Airport makes it the first stop for millions of travelers each year. For many, Montego Bay is Jamaica, a seamless transition from airplane seat to beachfront villa. All-inclusive resorts stretch along the coastline in neighborhoods like Rose Hall, offering controlled versions of the island experience, curated for maximum relaxation and minimal confrontation. But step outside the manicured gates and the real Mobe emerges. The city center is alive with vendors, taxi drivers, school children in uniform, and locals going about their daily lives. Sam Sharp Square, named after the national hero who led the 1831 slave rebellion, sits at the heart of this bustling landscape. The Montego Bay Cultural Center, located on the square, offers exhibitions on Jamaica's colonial past and cultural present, an antidote to the vacationer's bubble just a few miles away. Montego Bay's beaches, like Doctor's Cave and Dead End Beach, remain postcard perfect, yet it's the contrast between the tourist illusion and the community's lived reality that gives the city its edge. Local guides often speak candidly about economic disparities, the environmental toll of mass tourism, and the need for visitors to engage responsibly. Negril, where time slows down. A little over an hour's drive west along the coast, Negril presents a different rhythm. Smaller and more laid back, Negril grew from a sleepy fishing village into a bohemian retreat in the 1960s. Attracting hippies and soul-seekers drawn to its cliffs, open skies, and unfiltered charm. Though development has increased, Negril retains its slow tempo and countercultural spirit. The main stretch, Seven Mile Beach, is exactly what its name promises, a ribbon of soft white sand where reggae tunes mix with the crashing tide. Unlike Montego Bay's mega-resorts, Negril's accommodations lean more boutique. Beachfront cottages, open-air bars, and family-run guesthouses where owners still greet guests by name. The mood is communal, unhurried, but Negril is more than a beach. On its southern end, the West End cliffs offer dramatic views and even more dramatic experiences. Visitors leap from the limestone ledges into the sea below, cheered on by locals and tourists alike. Cliffside bars like Rick's Cafe, a mainstay since 1974, blend stunning sunsets with live music, jerk chicken, and the adrenaline rush of cliff-diving culture. Beneath the surface, however, lies a pressing concern, environmental degradation. Coral reefs off Negril's coast have suffered due to pollution, overfishing, and climate change. Conservation groups now work alongside local divers and hoteliers to promote sustainable tourism, including reef restoration, eco-snorkeling, and educational tours. These efforts remind visitors that paradise is not permanent. It must be protected. The complex face of Caribbean leisure. Montego Bay and Negril represent two sides of the same coin. One is polished, efficient, and built for volume. The other is soulful, intimate, and fiercely protective of its character. Yet both grapple with the same challenge: how to welcome the world without losing themselves in the process. Visitors often come seeking escape, but those who stay curious leave with perspective. A beach massage can be paired with a walking tour through Montego Bay's colonial ruins. A red striped beer and negril can follow a conversation with a local about coastal erosion or music history. In these places, tourism doesn't have to be passive. It can be participatory, respectful, and reciprocal. At their best, Montego Bay and Negril offer not just sun and sand, but a deeper understanding of what it means to be Jamaican in a world shaped by both hospitality and hardship. Here, in these coastal spaces, travelers are invited to experience joy, but also to ask questions, engage meaningfully, and carry something richer than a tan back home. Chapter 4, Ocho Rios and Port Antonio, Waterfalls, Wellness, and Natural Wonders. If Kingston is Jamaica's cultural heartbeat and Montego Bay its commercial gateway, then the northern and northeastern towns of Ocho Rios and Port Antonio are where nature reigns supreme. These regions offer a counterpoint to the island's urban centers, slower in pace, lush in texture, and saturated with the kind of beauty that feels almost otherworldly. Here, travelers trade neon nightlife for jungle trails, cascading waterfalls, and healing mineral springs. These are Jamaica's sanctuaries, both ancient and alive. Ocho Rios, the Garden of the North. Once a sleepy fishing village, Ocho Rios, or Ochi as locals call it, was transformed by cruise ships, celebrity villas, and resort development in the 1980s. Yet, despite its polished surface, Ochi remains deeply connected to Jamaica's ecological treasures and spiritual roots. At the center of it all is Dunn's River Falls, perhaps the most iconic natural attraction in the Caribbean. Towering 180 feet and stretching across smooth limestone tiers, the falls spill into the sea just west of town. Visitors form human chains to ascend the cascade, part adventure, part ritual. For Jamaicans, Dunn's River is more than a photo op. It's a place of ancestral energy, where water has always symbolized healing, rebirth, and continuity. Nearby, the mystic mountain rainforest allows visitors to experience the canopy by way of chairlifts, zip lines, and bobsled rides that pay tribute to Jamaica's famous Olympic team. But beneath the thrill lies a deeper lesson. This land is not just a playground. It is an ecosystem, delicate and deserving of reverence. Butterflies, hummingbirds, and tree frogs animate the forest, while conservation programs aim to protect endangered species like the Jamaican swallowtail. Ocho Rios is also home to Fern Gully, a 3-mile gorge carved out by an ancient riverbed and now a tunnel of over 300 fern species. It's a living museum of biodiversity and a vivid example of how Jamaica's interior pulses with natural resilience. Culturally, Ochi bridges the tourist world and the Rastafari ethos. Travelers can visit Rasta camps, where guides explain Itaal food philosophy, herbal medicine, and spiritual connection to the land. These are not performances. They are educational encounters rooted in faith, discipline, and ancestral pride. Port Antonio, where time moves differently. Further east along the coast lies Port Antonio, a town less touched by mass tourism and all the more powerful for it. Once the retreat of Hollywood royalty like Errol Flynn, Grace Kelly, and later musicians like Jimi Hendrix, Port Antonio remains one of the most authentically preserved places on the island. Its charm lies not in what's been built, but in what's been left alone. The town centers around a sleepy harbor framed by Georgian architecture and rain-soaked hills. Banana boats still dock in its port, echoing its history as a hub of Jamaica's early export economy. But the true magic lies in the surrounding landscape. The Blue Lagoon, a 200-foot-deep sinkhole filled with turquoise water, is perhaps the region's crown jewel. fed by both freshwater springs and the Caribbean Sea. Its color shifts with the sun's position, an iridescent mirror of the sky. Local folklore speaks of healing properties, and swimmers often describe the experience as spiritual, not just sensory. Nearby, Reach Falls offers a quieter alternative to Dunn's River. No crowds, no queues, just cascading water through mossy rocks and bamboo groves. Locals lead tours that involve wading through underwater caves and hidden river bends, with stories of maroons and ancient rituals flowing as freely as the water itself. Nanny Falls, named after Jamaica's national heroine Queen Nanny, lies in the hills of Moortown, a maroon stronghold. To visit is to step into a living archive of resistance. The Maroons, descendants of escaped enslaved Africans, still maintain semi-autonomous communities, guided by a council of elders and a deep respect for the land. Their relationship to water, to forest, to spirit, remains intact. Port Antonio's culinary culture reflects its multicultural history. African, Indian, Jewish, and indigenous Taino influences blend into a cuisine that prioritizes freshness and simplicity. Unlike resort zones, meals here are often cooked to order. Boston Bay, the reputed birthplace of jerk, offers smoky pork and chicken from roadside pits, often paired with roasted breadfruit and coconut water. The experience is raw, tactile, and utterly Jamaican. Eco-wellness and cultural healing. What unites Ocho Rios and Port Antonio is not just their geography, but their growing reputation as centers of eco-wellness and cultural healing. Travelers come not only to relax, but to reconnect. Yoga retreats, herbal tours, bush medicine workshops, and plant-based Ital diets all have deep roots here, not as trends, but traditions. These experiences are not manufactured for travelers. They are inherited practices passed down through generations of Jamaicans who understand the land not as property, but as kin. Moving beyond the brochure. To visit Ocho Rios and Port Antonio is to understand Jamaica in its quiet power. These towns don't shout. They whisper, beckon, invite you to slow down and feel the island's pulse beyond the beach. Here, the waterfalls remember, the forests breathe, and the land offers more than escape. It offers return. Chapter 5. The Soul of Jamaican Cuisine. Jamaican cuisine is not merely a collection of recipes. It is a living chronicle of migration, resistance, survival, and celebration. Each dish carries with it the weight of history, the influence of many cultures, and the creativity of a people who've long turned limited ingredients into rich, flavorful expressions of identity. In Jamaica, food is not background, it is foreground. It narrates stories, builds community, and sustains spirit. To understand Jamaica's culinary tradition, one must first understand its roots in enslavement and resilience. The enslaved Africans brought to the island developed ingenious ways to preserve, stretch, and transform food. Techniques like smoking, salting, fermenting, and slow cooking emerged from necessity, later evolving into beloved staples. Combined with ingredients from the indigenous Taino, European colonizers, East Indian laborers, Chinese merchants, and Lebanese traders, Jamaican food became a multicultural archive on a plate. The national dish, ackee and saltfish. At the center of it all is ackee and saltfish, Jamaica's national dish. Ackee, a fruit native to West Africa, is boiled until its yellow flesh blossoms, open like flower petals. It is sautéed with salt cod, onions, tomatoes, garlic, thyme, and Scotch bonnet pepper, forming a savory, buttery scramble that belies its complex origins. Saltfish, imported during colonial times, became a protein staple for the enslaved. Ackee was once feared to be poisonous by colonizers. Together, they form a dish that was once born of marginalization, but is now served with national pride, often alongside boiled green banana, fried dumplings, or breadfruit. Jerk, smoke and spirit. No exploration of Jamaican food is complete without jerk. More than a flavor profile, jerk is a technique, a method of marinating and slow-smoking meat over pimento wood, developed by the Maroons, Jamaica's early freedom fighters. The Maroons, hiding in the mountains to escape British forces, created this technique both as a form of preservation and as a way to cook without revealing their location through fire smoke. Today, jerk stands as the island's most globally recognized food. Traditional jerk pork or chicken is seasoned with a fiery blend of Scotch bonnet peppers, thyme, allspice pimento, scallion, and ginger. The meat is grilled over open flames in zinc-lined drums, a ritual you'll find from roadside pits in Boston Bay to urban corners in Kingston. It is food as memory, food as rebellion. Ital cuisine, food as faith. For many Jamaicans, food is also spiritual. Ital cuisine, practiced by the Rastafari community, is grounded in the principles of natural living. Ital avoids salt, meat, dairy, and processed ingredients, emphasizing purity and connection to the earth. A typical Ital meal might include kalaloo with coconut milk, red peas soup, steamed okra, or lentil stews cooked over wood fire. But Ital is not just about health, it is about liberation. For Rastafari, dietary discipline is part of liberty, a way of aligning the body with spiritual truths. Ital cooking often takes place communally, shared as part of reasoning sessions and spiritual gatherings. It reminds the visitor that food is not always transactional. It can be ceremonial. Street food, the pulse of the people. If you want to taste the everyday rhythm of Jamaican life, follow the scent of street food. Vendors are culinary artists in their own right, serving up quick, affordable, and deeply flavorful meals to workers, students, travelers, and elders. The streets are filled with the scent of pepper shrimp in plastic bags, jerk sausage with hard dough bread, and roast corn charred over makeshift grills. But, perhaps, no street food is more beloved than the Jamaican patty, a flaky golden pastry filled with seasoned beef, chicken, shrimp, vegetables, or even curried goat. Sold in gas stations, bakeries, and roadside stalls, the patty is an institution. Paired with cocoa bread, it becomes a meal worthy of reverence. Sweet offerings include gazada, a spiced coconut tart, toto, coconut cake, and grater cake, all rooted in African and European dessert traditions, modified over generations to suit the island's rhythm. Sunday dinner, a sacred tradition. While food is present in every moment of Jamaican life, Sunday dinner holds a special place. It is more than a meal. It is a sacred pause. Families gather across generations to cook, share, and give thanks. The table may feature oxtail stew, curried goat, rice and peas, fried plantain, and coleslaw. It's a menu that reflects both abundance and ancestry. Children learn from elders, stews simmer for hours, and laughter competes with gospel songs on the radio. In these homes, cuisine is oral history, passed down not just in recipes, but in taste, timing, and love. Regional flavors and culinary diversity. While Jamaica has national staples, regional variations keep the cuisine dynamic. In the parish of Portland, you'll find more seafood, coconut-heavy dishes, and banana-based sides. In St. Elizabeth, known as the island's breadbasket, the soil yields an abundance of root vegetables and red peas. Coastal towns serve more brown stew fish, escovitch snapper, and conch soup, while mountain regions favor heartier one-pot meals. Across the island, pepper is not optional. It is essential. The Scotch bonnet reigns supreme, delivering heat with a floral fruity undertone. And in every kitchen, you'll find grace. Brand products, Maggi cubes, and a carefully guarded bottle of homemade pepper sauce. Food as legacy. Jamaican cuisine is inseparable from Jamaican identity. It reflects centuries of adaptation and innovation, forged under duress but shaped with creativity and pride. From bush cookouts in the hills to five-star restaurants and tourist zones, The same spirit endures, to feed with flavor and to nourish with purpose. For the traveler, understanding Jamaican food is not just about what's on the plate, but what's behind it. It's about land, labor, and love. It's about who stirred the pot, who gathered the herbs, who seasoned it just right. In Jamaica, food is a conversation. It begins when the dish is served and continues long after the last bite is gone. Chapter 6, Markets and Maroons, Inside the Local Economy and Resistance History. To walk through a Jamaican open-air market is to experience the island's heartbeat in motion. But behind the hum of commerce and the colors of produce lies a deeper story, one that connects economic survival with historical defiance. Across Jamaica, from the bustling stalls of downtown Kingston to the remote strongholds of the Maroons, the intertwining threads of trade and resistance have long shaped how Jamaicans survive, thrive, and assert their independence. The market as microcosm. Markets in Jamaica are more than just places to buy and sell. They are living theaters of identity, resilience, and social exchange. Vendors arrange mountains of breadfruit, callaloo, sweet pepper, yam, and scotch bonnet with a sense of pride that defies their modest income. Children weave between shoppers with plastic bags. Elders sit under tarpaulin canopies offering bush teas and ground provisions, and radios crackle with dance hall and gospel in equal measure. Coronation Market in Kingston is the country's largest and most emblematic. Here, hundreds of stalls stretch over city blocks, pulsing with energy from pre-dawn until nightfall. Vendors arrive from every corner of the island, transporting goods by truck, handcart, and donkey. The market is as much about trust as transaction. Prices fluctuate with weather and harvest cycles, and long-term relationships matter as much as product quality. In rural parishes like St. Elizabeth and Portland, parish markets reflect local specialties. Red peas grown in the south, honey and yam from the northeast, coastal fish wrapped in banana leaves. Often the same hands that harvested the crop are the ones that sell it, negotiate its value, and return home with the earnings. While supermarkets exist, especially in urban centers, the market remains the primary economy for much of Jamaica's working class. It is unfiltered and organic, its structure governed by tradition, instinct, and communal knowledge. Higgling, the backbone of informal trade. Jamaica's informal economy is kept alive largely by higglers, entrepreneurs, primarily women, who buy, sell, and redistribute goods throughout the island. Some travel to Miami or Panama to import dry goods and clothing. Others move produce from farms to urban hubs. Higglers often operate outside official tax structures, yet their impact on the island's economy is massive. These women are the island's unacknowledged economists, negotiators, and logistics managers. They juggle childcare, transportation, inventory, and street smarts with razor-sharp efficiency. Their presence in the market is not just commercial, it is symbolic, a continuation of the tradition of Jamaican women as economic anchors, dating back to slavery and post-emancipation survival. Maroons, a nation within a nation. While Jamaica's markets reflect adaptability, its Maroons embody resistance. The Maroons are descendants of Africans who escaped slavery and established independent communities in the island's mountainous interior. These communities, through guerrilla warfare and strategic negotiation, forced the British to sign treaties in the 18th century, an unprecedented act that granted them land rights and autonomy. The most well-known Maroon settlements include Acampong in the Cockpit Country, Moortown in the Blue Mountains, and Scott's Hall in the East. These are not relics. They are functioning communities with councils, leaders, called colonels, and distinct legal and cultural frameworks. Economically, the Maroons rely on subsistence farming, traditional craft, herbal medicine, and increasingly cultural tourism. Visitors are invited to witness annual celebrations such as the Acampong Maroon Festival, held every January 6th. The event honors the signing of the 1739 peace treaty and the legacy of Queen Nanny, the only female national hero of Jamaica. Her military leadership and spiritual power are celebrated through drumming, dancing, ceremonial rituals, and storytelling. Maroon resistance is not confined to history. Today, Maroon communities are on the front lines of environmental activism, especially in the Cockpit Country. A rugged, biodiverse landscape under threat from bauxite mining and deforestation, the Maroons' stand against extractive industries is framed not just as ecological, but spiritual and ancestral. Protecting the land is seen as a duty handed down from their rebel forebears. Resistance through trade and tradition. Jamaica's economic structures, especially those rooted in informal or ancestral systems, are themselves a form of resistance. From markets that defy corporate homogenization to Maroon enclaves that assert sovereignty, Jamaicans have long crafted paths outside colonial frameworks. Even in the face of global pressures, such as rising costs, climate unpredictability, and digital encroachment, these systems persist, not as nostalgic holdovers, but as adaptive, living responses to structural inequality. Jamaica's markets and Maroon settlements share a common ethic: community before profit, tradition before trend. Whether selling gungo peas in a crowded market lane or leading a drum ceremony beneath the mountain canopy, these practices affirm Jamaica's commitment to agency, memory, and economic dignity. For the conscious traveler, visitors who venture beyond resort walls into Jamaica's markets or Maroon territories must come with respect, curiosity, and humility. These are not spectacles for consumption. They are systems with histories and meanings. Buy a handful of naysberries from a higgler and ask her how she makes her pickled mackerel. Attend a Maroon gathering not just to observe, but to listen and learn about the cosmology that ties land to freedom. In doing so, you won't just discover how Jamaicans make a living. You'll understand how they refuse to be defined by limitations, and how trade, like language, becomes a form of resistance. Chapter 7. Dancehall, Rastafari, and the Global Cultural Fire. Few places on Earth have influenced global culture as profoundly as Jamaica, and nowhere is this more evident than in its music and spiritual philosophies. What began as local expressions of survival, identity, and resistance have become international movements, redefining fashion, language, religion, and politics far beyond the island's shores. In this chapter, we explore two distinct but often intertwined forces: dancehall, Jamaica's explosive musical genre born from the streets, and Rastafari, the spiritual and ideological backbone of a nation's identity struggle. Together, they represent the global cultural fire that continues to radiate from this small island into every corner of the world. The rise of dancehall. In the late 1970s, as reggae began to mellow into international consciousness, a new sound emerged from the dance halls of Kingston, faster, harder, more urgent. Dancehall music, stripped down to pulsating rhythms and sharp lyrical flow, was born from the tensions of a country grappling with urban poverty, political violence, and youthful rebellion. It was Jamaica's unfiltered mirror, and it didn't blink. Artists like Yellowman, Shaba Ranks, Bounty Killer, and later Vibes, Cartel, and Spice pushed lyrical boundaries, using patois, metaphor, and punchline-heavy verses to critique social inequality, express sexual agency, and ignite party culture. Dancehall was unapologetically raw, sometimes controversial, always powerful. It was youth expression, weaponized with rhythm. The sound systems that birthed dancehall remain essential today. These mobile music platforms, massive stacks of speakers hauled onto streets or into open lots, create temporary sonic worlds where thousands gather. DJs, selectors, and MCs, DJs, battle with tracks, freestyles, and charisma. Crowds react with energy, language, and movement. The dancehall is both stage and sanctuary. Dancehall fashion, with its bright colors, skin-tight silhouettes, and gold accessories, evolved as a visual language of confidence and resistance. Street dancers created entire vocabularies of movement, from duddy wine to gully creep, turning the body into a storytelling device. While critics have often targeted dancehall for its explicit lyrics and hyper-masculine posturing, many defenders point to its role as a social safety valve. It offers a space for expression, protest, and even therapy, especially in communities where formal channels are blocked by class or political exclusion. Dancehall isn't just music, it's a way of life, and it has been exported globally, influencing hip-hop, reggaeton, afrobeats, and electronic music. Its slang is now heard in London clubs, New York studios, and Nigerian radio. Rastafari, spirit, symbol, and struggle. Parallel to the rise of dancehall is the ongoing evolution of Rastafari, a spiritual movement that emerged in the 1930s Jamaica in response to colonial rule, racial oppression, and a longing for African identity. Anchored by the reverence for Emperor Haile Selassie III of Ethiopia, whom many Rastafari see as divine, the movement fuses Old Testament theology, Pan-African philosophy, and Afrocentric consciousness. Rastafari is not a monolithic religion. It is a way of life. Its followers, often referred to as Rastas, live by principles of natural living, truth-speaking, and spiritual resistance. The movement rejects materialism, institutionalized religion, and the exploitative structures of Babylon, a term used to describe Western systems of oppression. Central to Rastafari culture is language. Terms like I and I, Liviti, and Jah, God, are not poetic flourishes but expressions of worldview. I and I dissolves the separation between self and others, recognizing the divine in every human. Dreadlocks, often misunderstood, are worn not as fashion but as spiritual covenant, symbolizing the Lion of Judah, strength, and the rejection of Babylonian grooming standards. Ital food, as explored in Chapter 5, forms the nutritional foundation of Rastafari, aligning the body with the sacred. Music has always been a conduit for Rasta philosophy. Roots reggae, championed by artists like Bob Marley, Peter Tosh, and Burning Spear, serves as scripture set to melody. Songs like Redemption Song, Equal Rights, and Marcus Garvey continue to educate and mobilize listeners worldwide. These anthems are spiritual calls to consciousness. Today, Rastafari exists in various mansions or sects, including the Nyabingi, Bobo Ashanti, and 12 tribes of Israel, each with its own practices, but united in reverence for Haile Selassie, African liberation, and moral living. Rastafari gatherings, often called reasonings, involve group meditation, drumming, chanting, and the communal sharing of ideas and food. The tension and the harmony. While dancehall and Rastafari may seem like opposites, one rooted in spiritual asceticism, the other in secular celebration, they often coexist in Jamaican life. Many dancehall artists borrow Rastafari language, symbols, or aesthetics. Likewise, some Rastas embrace elements of dancehall as a form of cultural expression. The tension between the two is part of a broader dialogue within Jamaican identity, sacred versus profane, resistance versus release, tradition versus evolution. Events like Rebel Salute and Reggae Sumfest illustrate this dynamic convergence. The former prioritizes roots reggae and conscious lyrics, even banning alcohol and meat from its grounds. The latter celebrates the full spectrum, from spiritual roots to hardcore dancehall, showing how both worlds shape the nation's artistic legacy. Jamaica's global influence is most potent when these voices merge. In cities like London, Toronto, and Tokyo, entire subcultures have formed around Jamaican sound, fashion, and spirituality. The diaspora, through music and migration, has carried dancehall and Rastafari into international consciousness, creating hybrid identities that continue to evolve the island's legacy. Cultural fire as legacy. In the end, Jamaica's contribution to global culture cannot be measured solely in beats per minute or streaming stats. Its real power lies in the way it challenges the status quo, gives voice to the voiceless, and dares the world to move differently, whether through rhythm, belief, or the bold claim of self-worth. Dancehall moves the body, Rastafari moves the soul. Together they ignite a cultural fire that refuses to be extinguished. Chapter 8: Spirituality, Rituals, and Hidden Afro-Caribbean Traditions. Beneath Jamaica's vibrant surface, its music, food, and beaches runs a deeper current, one that's less visible, rarely marketed, but profoundly powerful. It is the island's spiritual heritage, a living tapestry of African retention, Christian influence, indigenous ritual, and Afro-Caribbean belief systems that have endured despite centuries of colonial suppression. This spiritual mosaic is not just history, it is daily life, shaping how many Jamaicans interpret health, justice, misfortune, and the unseen world. In this chapter, we peel back the layers of Jamaica's hidden spiritual traditions, from the syncretic churches that blend Christian liturgy with African cosmology, to the ancestral practices quietly observed in rural communities. These systems may not always appear in guidebooks, but they define a major part of the island's cultural DNA. Revivalism, between spirit and scripture. Revivalism is one of the most vivid expressions of Jamaica's spiritual hybridity. Emerging in the wake of emancipation in the mid-19th century, revivalism blends African cosmology with Christian worship, creating a unique spiritual framework that centers on spirit possession, healing, and prophetic vision. There are two major streams: Revival Zion, which leans toward Christian theology and moral codes, and Pukumina, which retains more Africanized ritual elements, including drumming, spirit dancing, and herbal baths. While they differ in intensity, both honor the power of the Holy Spirit, the role of the ancestors, and the presence of unseen forces. A revival service is a sensory experience. Worshippers wear bright robes and head wraps, often in colors symbolic of healing, protection, or divine favor. The air is thick with drumming, singing, foot stomping, and rhythmic movement. Worship is not passive, it's participatory, immersive, and ecstatic. When the spirit descends, a person may enter trance, utter prophecy, or dance until collapse. For outsiders, revivalism may appear chaotic, but within the community, every movement, every beat, and every utterance carries meaning. Healing rituals are guided by mother or shepherd figures, leaders who interpret visions, prescribe herbal remedies, or perform bush baths for spiritual cleansing. These practices often address ailments Western medicine overlooks: spiritual attack, generational curse, or emotional imbalance. Kumina, the call of the ancestors. Even deeper in African spiritual retention is Kumina, a ritual system brought to Jamaica by Congo indentured laborers and freed Africans in the 19th century. Most prevalent in St. Thomas Parish, Kumina is both a religion and performance tradition centered around spirit invocation, drumming, and sacred dance. Kumina ceremonies are held to honor the dead, seek protection, or mark significant life events. The drumming, led by katas and playing drums, is complex, fast-paced, and intentionally designed to summon spirits. Participants move in circular patterns, often barefoot, with their heads wrapped in white cloth. As the rhythm intensifies, spirits of ancestors are believed to mount the living, speaking through them, offering wisdom, or delivering warnings. Language plays a role too. Kumina adherents often invoke words and phrases in Kikongo, preserving fragments of ancestral tongues lost elsewhere. The ritual space is sacred, defined by circular enclosures, fire pits, and ancestral symbols marked in chalk or ash. Offerings of rum, water, and food are made to appease spirits. To witness Kumina is to encounter a living archive of Africa and the Caribbean. It is not for spectacle, but for communion, with the past, with the ancestors, and with unseen dimensions of reality. Obeah, Power and Misunderstanding. Perhaps the most misunderstood aspect of Jamaican spirituality is Obeah. Often cast in colonial writings as witchcraft or black magic, Obeah is, in truth, a system of folk healing, protection, and justice, rooted in African cosmology and shaped by centuries of survival. Obeah is not a religion. It has no temples, formal clergy, or written doctrine. And instead, it is an esoteric knowledge system practiced by individuals called Obeah men or women who are sought for help in matters ranging from court cases and illness to business success, spiritual attack, or revenge. Its tools may include roots, herbs, candles, personal items, powders, or written prayers. During colonial rule, Obeah was criminalized, feared by plantation owners who knew its power could organize rebellion, sabotage, or psychological resistance. Even today, Obeah remains illegal under Jamaican law, though rarely prosecuted and widely practiced in private. To some Jamaicans, Obeah is taboo, spoken of in whispers. To others, it's a legitimate tool of empowerment, especially when formal systems fail. It exists in a gray zone, feared, respected, dismissed, and relied upon, often all at once. Importantly, not all spiritual workers are Obeah practitioners, and many traditional healers reject the term due to its stigma. Yet the knowledge of spiritual protection, herbal baths, talismans, and energy work remains widespread, especially in rural areas. Christian influence and syncretism. Despite the strength of these African-rooted systems, Christianity remains dominant in Jamaica. Over 70% of the population identifies with Christian denominations, from Anglican and Baptist to Seventh-day Adventist and Pentecostal. Churches anchor nearly every community, often doubling as schools, shelters, and meeting halls. Yet Christianity in Jamaica is rarely rigid. The line between Sunday worship and ancestral tradition is often fluid. Church mothers may prepare bush tea for ailments. Pastors may reference dream visions or spiritual warfare. Even gospel songs carry rhythms reminiscent of kumina or revivalist chants. What emerges is not contradiction, but syncretism, a distinctly Jamaican fusion of belief systems that reflects the island's history and cultural adaptability. Rituals of daily life. Spirituality in Jamaica is not reserved for temples or ceremonies. It flows through daily rituals. Mothers sprinkle salt to banish bad luck. Grandmothers light candles on full moons. Farmers offer the first fruit of harvest to the land before eating. Dreams are taken seriously. Omens are read in birds or breeze, and names carry spiritual resonance. Water, especially from rivers or the sea, is often seen as purifying. Sea baths are common for removing negative energy, often done at sunrise. Babies are blessed with bush baths. Homes are spiritually sealed with prayer, anointing oil, or handwritten psalms behind doors. In these everyday acts, the line between the physical and spiritual dissolves. To live in Jamaica is to live in both worlds. Respecting the sacred. For travelers, engaging with Jamaican spirituality requires cultural humility. These are not performance pieces. Revival, kumina, and obeah are not attractions. They are living, breathing systems of identity and power. If invited to witness a ritual or ceremony, one should come with respect. No photos unless permitted, no recording unless agreed, and no assumptions. Ask questions sincerely. Observe with reverence, and understand that in Jamaica, not all things are meant to be explained. What can be felt, however, is profound. That spiritual power here is not abstract. It is lived. It is inherited. It is everywhere. Chapter 9. How to Respect Jamaica. Etiquette, Language, and Local Norms. Jamaica welcomes millions of visitors each year. Some arrive for the beaches, some for the music, others seeking deeper cultural immersion. But regardless of the reason, how one shows up matters. Like any country, Jamaica has its codes, spoken and unspoken, that guide social interaction, establish mutual respect, and determine whether a traveler is merely passing through or truly connecting. This chapter offers not a checklist, but a lens, a guide to understanding local etiquette, cultural values, and the rhythm of Jamaican life. For those willing to listen, observe, and adapt, the reward is not just hospitality, but belonging. Language more than words. Most Jamaicans speak English, especially in formal settings like schools, banks, and tourism offices. But daily conversation flows in Jamaican patois, a vibrant, expressive Creole that blends English with African languages, Spanish, Arawakan, and other influences. Patois is not broken English. It is its own linguistic system with unique grammar, pronunciation, and cultural context. Understanding it requires more than vocabulary. It demands attentiveness to tone, metaphor, and rhythm. Phrases like wa guan, what's going on, mi dea ya, I'm here, I'm good, and respect, thank you, acknowledgement, are commonly used and appreciated when spoken with sincerity. But travelers should not mimic or perform patois for entertainment. It is a deeply rooted language of identity and struggle. When in doubt, speak clearly in English and listen closely. Jamaicans often switch fluidly between patois and English, depending on context and audience. Asking politely for clarification is always better than pretending to understand. Greeting customs and manners. Greetings are an important part of Jamaican social life. Whether entering a shop, boarding a bus, or passing someone on a country road, it's customary to acknowledge others with a simple good morning, good evening, or bless up. In rural areas, greetings are even more emphasized. Failing to greet someone, especially an elder, can be seen as disrespectful or standoffish. A handshake, a nod, or even a wave from a distance is often enough to show goodwill. Personal space and eye contact vary by region and generation. While younger Jamaicans in urban areas may be more casual, many older folks still value formality, especially when addressing elders, pastors, or community leaders. Use titles like Miss, Mr., or Auntie Uncle, even for non-relatives, to show respect. Dress and public appearance. Jamaicans take pride in personal appearance. Whether headed to church, school, or a day in town, clothing is often clean, coordinated, and well-pressed. Even street vendors and taxi drivers maintain a sharp presentation, often adorned with jewelry, cologne, or well-groomed hair. While beachwear is acceptable at resorts and coastlines, it is considered inappropriate to wear swimsuits or revealing clothing in public towns, churches, or government offices. Covering up when entering shops, taking public transport, or walking through rural areas shows cultural awareness. For religious or cultural events, modest attire is recommended. When visiting a Rastafari camp, for instance, it's respectful to avoid short shorts, crop tops, or clothing with offensive graphics. Head coverings may be offered to visitors before entering sacred spaces. Time, patience, and pace. Jamaica operates on a different tempo. The concept of island time is not just a cliche. It reflects a cultural value of patience, rhythm, and relationship over rigidity. Events may start late. Buses arrive when full, not when scheduled. Conversations may stretch far longer than expected. Rather than seeing this as inefficiency, travelers should view it as relational prioritization. In Jamaica, time is not just about productivity, it's about presence. Rushing interactions, showing visible frustration, or demanding speed can be perceived as arrogance or cultural insensitivity. The best approach is to relax into the rhythm. Things move at their pace for a reason. Engage, listen, laugh, wait. And when it does come together, whether it's your meal, your tour, or your taxi, it often exceeds expectations. Tipping, haggling, and money matters. Tipping is appreciated but not always expected. In hotels, restaurants, and guided tours, a 10 to 15% tip is customary for good service. In smaller shops, roadside stalls, or taxis, tipping is more informal. A few extra coins or rounding up is often enough. Haggling, while common in markets, is more nuanced than confrontation. It's a social dance. Start with a respectful inquiry. Smile. Negotiate lightly, and know when to accept a price. Driving too hard for a bargain over handmade goods or produce can appear disrespectful, especially when the seller's margins are already tight. Jamaica uses the Jamaican dollar JMD, but U.S. dollars are widely accepted in tourist zones. Still, it's advisable to carry local currency for smaller purchases, rural vendors, and public transport. Learning the exchange rate helps avoid confusion and shows preparedness. Photography and consent. Jamaica's landscapes and people are undeniably photogenic, but asking before photographing individuals is a matter of courtesy, especially in rural areas, markets, or spiritual settings. Some locals are happy to pose, others may decline, and that choice should be respected. Photographing children, homes, or religious ceremonies without permission is considered invasive. When in doubt, ask a simple, "Is it all right if I take a photo?" goes a long way and often opens doors to conversation. Tourism versus cultural engagement. Jamaicans are proud of their culture, but they are not performers. Travelers who treat the island like a spectacle often miss its essence. Avoid reducing Jamaica to stereotypes, weed, Bob Marley, or barefoot dreadlocked images. These are parts of the culture, but they are not the whole. Instead, ask thoughtful questions. Support local businesses. Attend a town festival, a school music performance, or a maroon gathering with humility. Speak with people, not at them. The more you engage with the real rhythms of the island, the more Jamaica will reveal itself to you. What respect looks like. Respect in Jamaica is not performative. It is practical, personal, and mutual. It's in how you greet a stranger, how you speak to a server, how you walk through a neighborhood that isn't your own. It's not about having the right accent or knowing every custom. It's about presence, openness, and listening more than speaking. To truly respect Jamaica is to see its people not as background to your vacation, but as hosts of a cultural treasure, a treasure that's offered, not owed. Chapter 10. Adventures You'll Never Forget. Blue Mountains, River Rafting, and Island Escapes. Jamaica may be best known for its music and beaches, but its greatest treasures often lie just beyond the postcard moments. Tucked in mountain passes, hidden in limestone caves, or gliding quietly along a bamboo raft. For the curious traveler, adventure in Jamaica is not about adrenaline alone. It is about immersion, connection to land and people, and the kind of beauty that leaves a mark long after the journey ends. From mountaintop sunrises to underground rivers, this chapter explores the unforgettable adventures that define Jamaica's wild side, each one offering not just thrill, but insight into the island's spirit. The Blue Mountains, elevation and awakening. Stretching across the eastern spine of the island, the Blue Mountains rise into misty heights and ancient quiet. Jamaica's tallest peak, Blue Mountain Peak, towers at 7,402 feet above sea level, offering panoramic views that on clear mornings stretch all the way to Cuba. But the magic here is not just in the vistas, it's in the air. Cool and eucalyptus-scented, the soil, rich and volcanic, and the stories held by the farmers, herbalists, and hikers who call the region home. A hike to the summit typically begins at midnight, allowing climbers to reach the peak by dawn. The trail winds through ferns, bamboo forests, and cascading springs, often accompanied by the calls of the Jamaican owl or the rustle of wild coffee trees. At the top, the sky breaks open in slow gold, revealing the island below like a living map. And yes, Blue Mountain coffee, one of the most prized in the world, is grown right here. Many small farms offer tours where visitors can learn about cultivation, harvest, and roasting. Beyond taste, each cup holds the story of generations who've tended these lands since emancipation. River rafting on the Rio Grande. Few experiences capture the soul of Jamaica quite like bamboo rafting down the Rio Grande. This winding river, born in the Blue Mountains and flowing gently toward the sea in Portland, offers a journey into nature, rhythm, and stillness. Originally used to transport bananas during Jamaica's colonial export era, these 30-foot bamboo rafts have been repurposed into vessels of slow exploration. Piloted by skilled local raft captains using a single bamboo pole, the rafts glide silently over jade-green water. Along the way, travelers pass overhanging vines, banana groves, and limestone outcrops. Kingfishers dart above the current. Sunlight flickers through leaves. The ride is more than scenic. It is meditative. Raft captains, many of whom have worked the river for decades, share stories of the land, point out native plants, or break into song. Some even stop along riverbanks for a plate of spicy jerk chicken, prepared on the spot by riverside cooks. The Rio Grande is not just a natural wonder. It is a living archive of Jamaica's agricultural, musical, and ecological history. Secret caves and hidden springs. Jamaica's limestone foundation hides hundreds of caves, many of them sacred to indigenous Taino communities and later used as hideouts by Maroons. While some remain inaccessible, several are open to explorers seeking underground marvels. The Green Grotto Caves, located between Ocho Rios and Montego Bay, are perhaps the most well-known. These vast caverns stretch over 1,500 meters and feature subterranean lakes, ancient carvings, and geological formations that echo millennia of history. For those willing to venture further, Somerset Falls, Cane River Falls, and Milk River Bath offer secluded escapes, each with their own story. Milk River, known for its radioactive mineral waters, is believed to have healing properties and has drawn visitors seeking relief from arthritis, skin conditions, and stress. In these places, the adventure is not loud. It is spiritual. The land itself becomes the healer. Cockpit Country, the Wild Frontier. In Jamaica's northwest lies Cockpit Country, a rugged and ecologically rich terrain of steep hills, sinkholes, and thick forests. This region was a stronghold of the Maroons, and its name reflects the landscape's resemblance to cockfighting pits, deep, irregular hollows carved by ancient limestone erosion. Hiking in Cockpit Country is not for the casual stroller. Trails are rough and maps are few, but with the guidance of local Maroon descendants, travelers can explore this wild interior, home to rare orchids, endangered birds, and plants found nowhere else on Earth. What makes this place extraordinary is its cultural overlay. Stories of Queen Nanny, sacred drum rhythms, and herbal knowledge still animate the land. Even the air feels different, charged with ancestral memory and ecological urgency. The region remains under threat from mining interests, and visiting helps sustain eco-conscious tourism and land preservation efforts led by the community itself. Off-the-grid escapes. For those seeking solitude, Jamaica offers a range of off-the-grid escapes. Pelican Bar, a driftwood shack, perched on a sandbar off the coast of Paraty Bay, can only be reached by boat. There, visitors sip cold drinks, surrounded by sea, pelicans, and peace. In Treasure Beach, a string of fishing villages offers calm coves, creative retreats, and a close-knit community of farmers, poets, and beach dwellers. Here, yoga meets fishing, and mango trees shade open-air bookshops. Farther afield, the tiny offshore cays like Lime Cay near Kingston or Booby Cay off Negril offer pristine beaches, snorkeling, and complete detachment from the digital world. These aren't luxury escapes. They are quiet revolutions, reminders of how little one actually needs to feel whole. Adventure as cultural insight. In Jamaica, adventure is not just about the destination. It's about the people who take you there. The farmer guiding you through misty fields, the raft captain humming Mento songs, the elder who hands you bush tea by a riverside path. These moments define the journey as much as the peaks, caves, and waves. What makes these adventures unforgettable is not their rarity, but their authenticity. They are deeply Jamaican, rooted in land, shaped by history, and powered by human connection. To explore them is to see Jamaica not just as a destination, but as a living, breathing force of nature and culture combined.